Well, I thought you want to represent the case or whatever. What do you think?
Oh, if we introduce people, oh, what if we introduce everybody?
Everybody
knows everybody. Adam, what hat tomorrow should be a regulator hat?
Bobby?
Which hat tomorrow should be in the regulator's hat? All right, so I think, Chairman, at the first hearing, there would have been an order to grant a temporary reduction in the interest charge on security deposits. I think the intention this afternoon is to review the order and maybe decide whether it should be made obsolete. That's the correct word.
Absolute.
The existing order is a 2.4, is it?
Yeah.
Or whether it should be further revised. But I think our expectation would be that that the order would set the interest, hopefully, until we probably make a representation again for any further revision. But I think the intention today is to remove the temporary nature of the order, or to review that temporary nature of the order.
Did you say until something, until you review something?
Until I think the conditions are right for an application for some reconsideration.
In effect, you're asking it to remain at 2.4 until such time as you can review it?
Well, we know the argument we had before the last time where we kind of benchmark the interest rate, I think, on ordinary savings accounts.
Yes, or 1 year deposits.
Right. the rates have come further, as far as I understand, but I don't know if we are representing for a reduction of the 2.4.
Well, we use the same argument that we want to benchmark it against the average saving rate that is paid by the local commercial banks.
Good.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What is the value of this deposits right now in your books? The deposits. Consumer deposits.
1.6
December, right? Yes. As I was about 1.6.
1.6
billion.
Billion, right. Of that, can you give me an idea year in, year out, or maybe last year? Mm-hmm. How many surrenders were made and paid out of that?
I don't have that, but yes, I can give that to the commission.
But it's a very infinitesimal.
It's at least refund small, yes. Yes.
The amount you're treating as a deposit and you're relating it to the banks, really, where deposits as such attract a very low rate of interest. But you can look at it the other way, to where you're borrowing these funds from the customer to the tune of $1.6 billion to use in your business, which is, it's part of your working capital. And therefore, if you look at it that way, a much higher rate of interest would apply.
True.
Right?
But we also, in calculating the applicable increase or decrease on the final returns are paid, the security deposits are treated as a liability, as it is,
just
paid back. And if you follow the formula through, in a sense, really, the customer is benefiting at just over 5% from that, in that the tariffs will not increase by about 5-ish percent.
Yeah, sorry, maybe I can be corrected, but I looked at the formula and the reduction to the working capital, which is what applies for the, it's a marginal effect. I mean, it's not significant in terms of reducing it to the, and how it affects the AR. To my mind, that the benefit is, it's not compared to, say, reducing the interest rate from, say, people say 2.4%, say 1% or whatever, you know. My own view is that, you know, based on the fact that it can be looked at both ways, that's a reasonable rate of interest in my mind on this. And mind you, it's only a book figure because you're not paying out this money. It's only a margin, a small amount you're paying out, if anything. You're only paying out when it surrenders.
Oh, no, you have a credit account.
Yes, I know your credit account, but remember, your credit account, you get it as an expense, and you get a tax benefit too, somehow, you know, obviously. But I mean, that's incidental. That, my view, is, my personal view, a reasonable rate of interest is about 5%, to be honest. And it's only a book figure in. I don't know, that's my personal view, you know, but that's okay.
No, I think what I should say is that because it has an impact on setting the tariff, and because it has an increase in the tariff, it means that any increase down here basically is going to take away our cash flow.
Right.
Effect cash flow. We're now recovering it because it's the recovery is through the tariff.
Yeah, but
it's
not affecting your cash flow in any case.
Yes, you have to
credit
the customer's account.
Yeah, but that's a book entry, not paying all that.
No, okay.
If I may just interject here, I think what Ash is trying to see is that when they're computing the profits that they're entitled to, right, it's the ARR, the rate of return, times the asset base. But the asset base is reduced by $1.6 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So effectively, about they're out of pocket by $84 million if they were to increase the risk which they're entitled to.
How are you getting 84, sorry?
Pardon me?
How are you getting 84?
5.46%, which was their ARR, right? Times the 1.6.
Okay.
So the customer benefits to the tune of $84 million in reduced tariffs, plus 2.4%.
Well, the tariff isn't reduced.
Yes,
I mean, the tariff is not increased.
No. The new
tariff could have been increased.
The tariff remains what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Put it another way, right? What happens? No. What happens, right? What happens is that $84 million goes to the revenue less. $84 million less goes to the revenue for foregone account.
Okay.
Right. Which the company can recoup for a future date, right? So
the company anniversary of the, I think we have to apply that interest accrual to the customer popular credit.
On the deposit account?
No.
The electricity account.
On the electricity account.
Uh-huh. So there's $300 million
a
year.
So the interest goes to the electricity account?
Account, right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it actually affects you where you collect it.
What does GPL do with $1.6 billion consumer deposit? I guess it's not a sum that goes or sits in the bank.
No.
So why are we equating it to the money?
Well, the cash is fungible, so you can't say, well, take this and put it to X, Y, or Z. It's cash in the bank to use for all sorts of purposes.
And if you were to take loan from the bank, what is the rate?
You have to borrow.
Yeah.
Well, if you borrow for capital expenditure, it'll be over 10%.
10%.
But we don't borrow from the bank.
We
can't
borrow
commercially. Borrow from government.
We get it through government.
But then we get a preferential rate.
So the government gets it at 1%. And we get it like 2, 2.5, 3 at the most, depending on whether it's IDB, Exim Bank, China, PetroCaribe. So the different rates, but we're getting at the concessional rate because we're getting through concessional windows from these entities.
But third-party people, ordinary people would be paying at least maybe anything between 11 and 14%, am I not right? Probably.
Not a commercial bank.
Depending on the credit rating.
Right.
I mean, what should be considered is the fact that we're not applying also interest on our selling balances. We're providing a 28-day credit without any interest added. And even the balance is older, we're not applying interest.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the consumer receivables.
Huh?
What the consumer receivables.
They're very difficult. Very difficult. Because, you can look at several ways. And really, it's customers' money using for working capital. And, you know, if we take the effect of what you were just saying about the effect on the reduction in the return, you know, even so, I think
4 or 5% is still very reasonable. That's my view. Eh? I'm only wondering.
Yeah. What happens there is this: is that this is a bulk figure that's driving up the tariff,
right?
Right. And the tariff is not fair to everybody.
Right.
So the people who have the larger deposits benefit the most.
Yeah, yeah.
But the little person now pays for that for the other people who got a big deposit. So it's kind of hits everybody, but the benefit is to those who have the larger deposits.
I'm sorry, you may not want the benefit.
When the tariff goes up, everybody gets hit by the tariff.
Right, right.
But people who have the largest deposits obviously would benefit the most from a higher interest. But then the unintended, the 140,000
But that's based on the level of the deposit. But
right.
It's the same rate to apply.
So the 140,000 domestic consumers who have the lowest deposit, obviously you won't see the big benefit in the business customers who have the millions.
Because the rate will be the same, won't it?
The tariff will be the same.
Oh, the tariff will be the same.
So the increase in tariff, let's say it goes to 12%, everybody gets hit by the 12% or 5%, whatever it is.
So they pay different deposits, different amounts?
Right,
yeah.
Based on a contract. So a businessman coming into a big business would probably pay $8-10 million, while a small customer pays $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
But they all get hit with the tariff, when the tariff goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So the ocean $15 finished. I find a receipt on $15.
I paid $50 for my
1960.
But a lot of people would not claim that because let's say people are overseas and they forget all about that. So you would never you have the benefit of that permanently anyway.
But that's the $5 and the $2.50 and the 50 cents.
Yeah.
So a lot of those people can't find the receipts, but the recent payments would certainly
What also happens too is that When a customer surrenders a service, generally the service is taken by someone else, and they generally pay more in consumer deposits than.
They pay more or the same contract?
No, they pay more.
They have to close the contract.
They have to close the
so
contract.
So every new applicant is a new contract.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of interest, you'll get a complaint. Well, not a complaint, an application filed. The man closes the account. He said, pay $5, $5,000,
mm-hmm.
and he can't get back the money yet. So you all would have to. So you went there and they are just pushing him
around.
What is the procedure for him to get his money? What you got to do? So we can advise him, what is the problem? If he doesn't have a receipt, what happens? Your record would show that he is on board.
Right, so the record really is only recent. The system was able to collect that information. In the old days, there are no way of storing the data. Or your record.
Let me correct you, sir. The data was stored at Mr. Gaskin through today.
That was when you used to be there.
Yes.
A lot of scholars don't people going on when certain people were there, you know.
Sure. The guy's on the right side. Is he on the right side?
Yeah, anymore. You're not seeing the two of them on this side.
Proceedings are being recorded tonight.
Yeah.
I may end up on the website. Just off.
Going live on the website?
Me.
Not live. But give them our website.
Yeah,
I think they might be on the website. Give a like.
Now we're keeping an electronic copy of all this information, so it's readily accessible.
But wasn't it started in the days of CDC, yes, right?
We started really about
2000. On the chair, it'd be too close.
Yeah.
Yeah. They started a couple of minutes ago. Mr. Solomon is the only person who, among those who spoke, he's the only person who suggested a figure.
Oh, I see. But I think before you get to the assessment of the figure, on what basis are you making a figure? Because in the memorandum you wrote, I think that was on the line that any figure must be on a basis.
Mm-hmm.
And that we thought really that in the, I don't know whether video, whether my memo was circulated. Well, that is one thing which was on the line that I think that the first thing is that the GPL, it appears that they came to the basis, to their figure, on the basis of the savings rate, the savings rate. Now, why the savings rate? Because we're saying that this is not the correct basis. The equally logically correct would be to use the lending rate. And if we say that both lending rate, we talk about the banking system, both the lending rate and the saving rate have an equilibrium, they're logically the same thing, then we must look at each of them and see which is more relevant to the GPL's position and the consumer's position. I hope I'm making myself clear. If you're not following, just please, tell me so I look over. And it's equilibrium. Now we look at the two positions. Now in the memo we had, the savings rate is a 1%, but I think that was the argument in the GPL. Now the savings rate is 1%. The deposit, what is the deposit? Is the deposit can be equated to a saving or to a loan? We think that the deposit is much more of the nature of a loan rather than a savings account. These are the characteristics of a savings account. A savings account is very limited, even a fixed deposit. It goes no more than 2 years, a year normally now. Two, that it's withdrawable at any time, including the fixed deposit, just so you lose the interest. But it's a fund, it's an amount of money that's withdrawable. And now that does not apply to the deposit which is made. And the third thing is that a savings account in some ways, especially fixed deposit, could be used as a security in some kinds of transactions. Now that is not so with regard to the deposit to the GPL. Now as a loan, if you look at it from the other side, as a loan thing, when a consumer makes a depositor or a subscriber, makes a deposit to the GPL, it's either a lifetime deposit, which he never withdraws, or it is a very long term deposit that he makes. And this makes it much more of the nature of a loan. That's the first thing. The second thing about it is in terms of the characteristic of a loan is that the amounts of money that are deposited by consumers over any period, I'm sure the GPL does not and should not have it sitting down in a savings account. I hope they use the money as to meet their overdraft arrangements. And if this is done, then it is. What makes me think that it is done is because when you talk about paying an interest rate on it, it means that you must be earning some income over it, even if it's 1%. It means that the thing is that the GPL does earn income on it. And we're thinking, we're saying that it should be used to meet your overdraft, which is something like 12 to 15%. And what, as consumers, we were asking for is at least 10%, which would be below the lending rate. And it is a lending rate. So that is, in essence, what our position was. That is, the deposit is much more, has much more, many more of the characteristics of a loan rather than a deposit. And this is something I think that when I talk about the basis on which you make the evaluation of the interest, that's what I meant, basically, in essence. So Mr. Chairman, what we're doing really, we're proposing that the rate of interest payable by the GPL be 10%, which is nearing or bearing towards the lending rate. That's our proposal. And we gave some of the reasons, the basic reasons why we're doing that.
You made your point very clearly. I think everybody understands what you were saying. You needed to ask him any clarification. If anybody doesn't understand what Mr. Diallo was saying, also.
I just wanted to
comment.
Mr. Dan, just before you came in, actually, we were discussing the ramifications of increasing the interest. What happens is that the interest, the expense, the interest that is paid out, as you know, right now the amendment requires us to credit the customer's account with this interest every year. We are able to recover that through a tariff increase. So if we take the interest to 12% or any other figure, the amount that we have to pay out there comes back as a tariff increase. That's the story, it's a double-edged sword. And I was explaining that when that tariff increase, if it were to be applied, it hits every customer, whether your deposit is $5,000 or $3 million. So it's not a loss to us, in that it is not a burden to us. It goes to the customer back as a burden in higher tariff.
Well, in terms of the logic of that, we've raised this, of course, and I don't believe this is a serious proposal, but when you look at losses, part of the losses are land losses, which is GPL's responsibility. And consumers could very well say, look, deduct the land losses from our bills. And that, I mean, the logical position would be the same. And I think that that as consumers, what we would do, what we're thinking really, is that even if it were to have that backlash, as it were, just as line losses are doing, it would be equivalent to the same thing, in the same position. And it's something that I think it's something that, I mean, I of course have been saying this, that I respect and I say this publicly, the position and the burdens, the kind of that the GPL has. Indeed, they have been carrying very manfully. In fact, when you had floods in 2005, I think, when the whole place was flooded up, you had the equivalent in North America, and GPL kept the service going, telephones, electricity, everything going wide in North America, in Louisiana and Mississippi and those kinds of places. They were out for a month. And recently I heard in Canada, you had bad weather, and in New York when you had the storms there not so long ago, you had a wipeout of power. And I think that GPL, in fact, as consumers, we have recommended that the corporation be given the level of service for on that occasion. But I don't know that they were there. But it's not that we are not sympathetic towards the position of the GPL. In fact, I think that we are. But at the same time, I think if we, what I'm saying is that if way is given on although it's a very niddling kind of thing, it would be a bad consumer principle to do this. Mm-hmm. And so we think that we will, despite the what the CEO said about its coming back to the consumers. I think it is, but the other thing about this, and this is outside what we're talking about, but as we are on it, about that, well, that's by the law, about crediting this small amounts of money comparatively to every consumer. What is the cost of that thing? I'm sure it is, I mean, your accounting cost.
Quite a bit of interest.
That would be close to about $100 million a year.
No, I mean the accounting costs of doing that kind of thing. I'm talking about small consumers, and most of us are small consumers, or small, you know, bills of 5 cents.
No, but this is story. The story is what I was explaining is that if we were to take up the tariff, this is one of the elements that is driving a tariff increase. So the higher you raise the interest, the more it's actually pressuring tariff. And if we were to apply that tariff increase, the 140,000 small consumers, 150,000 small consumers would be hit as hard with the higher tariff as the big customers who have the bulk of the security deposit. Who we're benefiting essentially is maybe 1,000, 1,500 large businesses.
Not really, either, in the sense that if you pay them 10%, then you have to pay them back 10%. And they pay you back 10%.
No, wait. This is a story. We just mentioned that we have about 1.6 billion in security deposits. I would imagine maybe 70% of that is for a couple of large businesses. So if we're driving up tariffs, let's say 5%, and everybody getting hit with a 5%, the money is essentially going to 100 and something big businesses or 1,000 something big businesses.
No, what we're saying really is that...
So the risk is we're exposing all the customers, 173,000 customers, to a benefit which is really accruing largely to a couple of people.
So two further points, sorry, for me. To reiterate in your absence, we have talked about. One was that we do not charge interest on arrears on customers, although we do also have that ability. So we are foregoing that. And it's much higher. It's about, I seem to recall a lot from it, it's about 10% over the bank prime rate. So that's one. Secondly, the point serious as well on the the loans that we get. You're looking at the 10%, the 12-15% you mentioned is a normal lending rate from the banks. Even if we were to accept the view that we go with a lending rate, we borrow at about 3%. And this is coming primarily from government. Right? So even if you take the perspective that the customer is lending us this money and we are treating it as a loan, then we have to look at the rate that we are borrowing at and not the commercial lending rate.
I thought you were getting $6 billion interest free.
The money that we get.
No. See, and this is a misperception too. A lot of people. The money is coming to GPL. Last year was the first year that we really had $1 billion coming as subvention. Most of the money there is loans. When they said they're funding this 26 megawatt project, it's a loan. It's a $26 million US dollar loan that we have to pay back.
the PR people, you know, have certainly not been explaining to the public, because last year we had petitioned the politicians. I think we must have sent you a copy of one of our letters to the Parliament people about the monies to GPL. I think it's $5 billion, and we had petitioned. Now, if you want to explain to the public and to the politicians too, because I'm sure they're not aware of it, that they think that it's a kind of a, Mr. Lindell is going to be $6 billion the richer, somewhere about June or something, I don't know.
We had this opportunity to explain, at one of the parliamentary sectorial committee on economic services, I think that's what it's called, where we had to do a presentation, I think it was July or August of last year. And I did go that through. And I think that's when most of them realized that the monies were really loans.
Yes, but they forget it all it away when they go to the parliamentary chamber.
Wow.
So I think it would be a very good thing. Well, on the basis of honesty and straightforwardness, if the DPS were to more succinctly, forcefully, and simply explain its financial problems and woes, etc., to the public, because the public really, I was not quite aware that you paid on that $6 billion. You were going to pay a 3% interest. And because as it's stated in the budgetary statements that you read, there is absolutely nothing like that said. And I think Mr. Solomon would have studied that budget already. And I don't know whether he needs much more.
So the current budget?
Yes.
So that includes subsidy for lending, and $3.2 billion.
Yeah. Yes. I mean that.
Yes. It includes.
Which I thought.
Yeah. Quite right. They don't say it like that in the budget, but subsequently they send loan agreements to execute.
So, Mr. Dyer, what happens here is that, like the 26 megawatt, the monies came from the Petrocaribe fund, and as you know, that's through these Petrocaribe deals. The monies that are available in the fund there have certain priority investment areas, and one of them is electricity. Similarly, the money that we're using now for the Chinese project, the infrastructure development project, is coming from the Chinese Exim Bank. And again, they have certain priority areas, and electricity is one of them. So and how it happens is that the government has to contract that loan and then lend it to GPL. So if they contracted, like I think the Exim Bank loan might be 1.5% interest, they will put an add-on that is 0.5% or whatever it is, and then lend it to us.
And so the bottom line is where you are paying 3% or
2%. Let me make a point. I think, just for your sort of, just to sort of amplify your point, you know, the business of any business really will have different sources of finance to run the business. In your case, the majority of your source is government or pseudo-government IDB at very subsidized rates of interest, 3%, 2%, 1%, 4%. But also, a part of your financing could be from outside that source, where you have to get a higher level.
We're not allowed to borrow. We're not allowed to borrow.
Well, I mean, you're allowed in a way.
At the commercial rates.
For deposits coming in.
we are part of this hippie conditionality.
Yeah.
And if you look at the DNE, there's a specific case, a statement there on the limitations of commercial borrowing force, that we are still governed more or less by the hippie conditionality. And any new loan, they must have a grant element of 35%. And you could only get that if you get it at a concessional rate.
That's why my view is, before you came in, yeah, based on the same arguments you're making, but you know, it's a complex issue, and it's a combination of both perhaps lending and borrowing. And that's why I thought a good thing, taking into account all the what was pointed out in terms of the tariff rates and so on, that perhaps a 5% would be a very fair rate, taking into account the whole scenario. That's my personal view as a commissioner.
Okay, if I may ask one question.
It used to be 6%. I said 10, you would say, around there, 1. But if you split the difference between the two, then it would be very high.
54.5, the difference would be 4.
7.5, no?
Why it used to be 6%. This used to be the usual rate.
In view of the explanation given concerning the around 40,000 and the 30 or 40,000, the high thing, could there be two rates? Higher rate for the ordinary 40.
That's discrimination.
I just want to ask
one question. I just want to ask one question directed towards Ash. What's your weighted average cost of capital, you would say?
Now it's about, I'll say about 6%.
Sorry to avoid your head.
No, it's not.
GT&T pays 8%.
Well, that's an important point. You're sure with that?
Those are the figures I have.
Yeah, 8%.
GWI pays, four sides, 2.4. GWI.
No, GWI is
6%?
No. When the rates
change. You like to sit aside, you don't want to sit.
No.
GWI
rates trigger in, it will be 2.4%.
There's a lesson, 2.4.
You said 6.
No, he said 2.4.
The radar working well.
That's why I asked you to go on the company.
2.48%. 2.48%, the simple average.
But Chairman, just to continue what you were saying in terms of the, if you were to have the different
categories.
Right, different categories, why would it really be discriminatory? I mean, in any event, you're looking at residential as against commercial. They're all paying different rates.
This is what
the CEO was saying, that obviously you're paying a lot more in terms of interest. They stand to benefit more, as opposed to the very small consumer is going to be getting, let's say, if you set it at 1%, which is what you were proposing.
Actually, I was just, pick up the chairman's position as the secretary has done. Not merely a commercial rate, really, versus residential, but you can look for other. There are a number of other criteria that can separate the two sets of subscribers. And if this can be clearly done, and I think the underlying word is clearly done. Then it can happen. Because, I mean, we can look, for instance, at you look at Linden's position in Georgetown, and you say it's definitely discriminatory to Georgetown subscribers. But there are other kinds of social and other reasons, other criteria, to come to those conclusions. And similarly, I think that in addition to the point that Vidyahar mentioned about commercial, we could possibly think in terms of other social, or inject other social elements to it. That is, people who pay $10,000 or under per month are the ordinary subscribers. Just look at the figure, not so much. You can also put the point about commercial and non-commercial, because the two of them may coincide, actually, when you look at the amounts. I think that we can get a formula, that what the chairman just said could be a way out. And what Mr. Salmon was saying that the rate for the non-commercial people, he's thinking we're not 10. 10 is gone down from that. And so we agree, if we do, getting the Buddhists dependent on this thing. So if we look at it from one, having two elements in your rate base, which indeed there is, in fact, there are two elements in it, and you underline this. The very few who are very big subscribers, and the other 100,000 people who own very big. One criterion mentioned, commercial, non-commercial. The second thing is that I think the quantum, which could be a very public relations thing in terms of the quantum, to let people know. And this is could be another one. I think those two areas, would, if this is served properly, it would communicate that it is not discriminatory, but it's realistic.
So let me make a point. Right now, it is known that the business tariffs are subsidizing the domestic tariff. And the last tariff study that was done is suggesting to the extent of 33%. So we got to be careful that this is not another subsidy.
Yeah.
And it's going to be seen in another light as a subsidy.
Well, judging from what Prime Minister Hines said about that commercial element and their payments, or how much they don't pay, if this can be factored into that kind of argument, we'll see that the GPL is subsidizing that group. As it is, but I think that it's not so much that, you see, there are some areas, for instance, the landline telephones, which is now coming up.
Right.
Now landlines are cross-subsidized, or have been cross-subsidized by the overseas calls. And in the new dispensation that's coming about, we are suggesting, this is off the thing, but it has some relativity, we are suggesting that when the law was made about this, there was only one company with two areas. There was no cell at the time. So we're suggesting that the subsidy be shared with the cellular people overseas, and to keep the landlines going, because very very likely if that is not done, the landlines would be neglected by GT&T and will become just as it was before GT&T came here. That is a no good thing. But what I'm saying is that the analogy really is that subsidies or cross subsidies is not a gift. It's not something which is somebody's goodwill or beneficence or something. Cross subsidies in public utilities is an established principle, and it's so in most utilities. So that I think that if the bigger subscribers were to react that way, that is one of the things. It's not a favor, it's not a beneficence, it's an obligation. And I think that the GPL should also regard it in that way. Because if you don't regard it in that way, you're really batting on a very sticky ground as against those people.
And one of the things which government has committed to is to rebalance tariffs and to ensure that every tariff category pays an economic tariff. And that is a commitment to the IDA. And so that, the only reason why we have not, the government hasn't been pushed to implement this now, is because they've said unequivocally it will be done when hydro comes online. And in our development plan, we've spoken about that, and it's reflected in the development plan, that the current tariff, the subsidy that is offered to residential consumers would essentially be removed. So it's not, while it might be a principle, the fact is the IDB is saying that every category of customer must pay an economic tariff.
That's what the IDB is saying, and what that is the common wisdom now in the world about paying what you use. this comes with the free market, and the change to the free market, and the whole change in economic thinking that has come about in the last 7 years. But this also has had some kinds of revisions, and even in the United States, which were the champions of that kind of thing, it's been revising, because it's not, you see, any kind of extreme position is always unrealistic. And that, the it's being doctored, it's being corrected to make it workable. And I think that that paying for having rates, you pay for what you use, kind of thing. I think in principle, personally, I agree with that, and I think most people will, except people who just don't are irresponsible. or people who want to use things that they don't earn, if you like.
If I may just add one point. It's not true to say that the commercial consumers subsidize the retail consumers. The commercial consumers are themselves subsidized, because I don't think they pay the economic rate for the power provided. The economic rate is only about $70-something a kilowatt hour. What I think happens is that the subsidies come from the degradation of your assets. Basically, depreciation is not a cash flow item. And therefore, that's where the subsidy really comes, right? You don't really provide for the maintenance of your assets. So I think you should know that, right?
No. What I'm saying is come out of a study done by Dr. Lecaris.
Well, study wrong. The commercial consumers do not subsidize the retail consumers.
I won't say that Dr. Lecaris is wrong.
Here. you know what is your average cost of to produce a kilowatt of power? What was it, Ash?
17 cents now.
No, your overall cost, right? When you add everything in, right? You take what you sell by your cost, right? You're supposed to sell something that was a kilowatt hour, right?
No.
Or look at it this way, right?
Your average selling price.
No, your average selling price is $65.
So production cost can be
to break.
I know. So even the break-even cost is not 70-something.
Break-even cost is about $70-something.
That's another story.
Pardon?
Yeah, he got to switch over to that side. Of
yeah, we got to bring over this.
No.
Mr. Chairman, I think the point that I understood the accountant was making was that GPL is subsidizing these commercial consumers like they're subsidizing everybody else. And when you talk about those commercial consumers subsidizing the non-commercial consumers, why don't you balance the subsidies? Or ask the if that is going to be an argument for the big subscribers, is to say, well, will you pay us? We wouldn't pay us what our subsidy is. And this would be an equilibrial kind of thing to let people understand that they also are getting something from the taxpayers, of which the 140,000 are members. Mr. Chairman, I think we can go. It's a kind of, this thing can be a kind of a circular argument if we go on in this way. And I would suggest that that Mr. Solomon has a formula. The GPL has a formula. Let us about what kind of rating situations, because and discussed an actual rate. Because if we were to discuss the pros and cons and all kinds of things and economic theory and whatever it is, we would really not get anywhere. So I think we can do this. Can you restate your position?
Yeah, we'll discuss it. Any final word anyone wants to say? The Kind of Commission will have to meet to this, to consider all these issues.
Yep.
And take forward, the ladies would like to add anything? No? You won't let the papers say we're treating ladies badly. We're asking you.
My role here is just.